Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Divorce Girl Smiling Podcast. My name is Jackie Pilisoff, and I'm your host. I'm the creator and editor-in-chief of Divorce Girl Smiling, the website, the podcast, and the mobile app. One thing I really remember when I was going through a divorce was I really just wanted it to be over. And I wasn't thinking about long-term. I just wanted to get through the divorce. And it's understandable, I think, to feel that way if you're listening to this and you feel that way too. But it's also important to look at the big picture and not just look at the short term. Why? Because if you just look at the short term, there's going to be things that are going to be overlooked in the divorce agreement as a result of, I just want to get through this. So it's important to make sure that your divorce agreement is well thought out and that all the what ifs are addressed. And if you do that, you're going to avoid post-divorce litigation, which can end up costing you more money and more time and more stress. So I have a great guest with me today to talk about this. Her name is Catherine Miller. She's a divorce attorney based out of New York and serves New York and Connecticut. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, Jackie. Nice to be here.
So nice to have you on the podcast, as always. So a little bit of information about Catherine. She has been a divorce attorney for over 30 years. She's the founder of the Miller Law Group, which is an all-women's boutique law firm with 7 divorce professionals. And she's also the director at the Center for Understanding in Conflict, which is an organization that teaches mediation, collaborative law, and other conflict resolution skills. And Catherine also has a podcast. It's called Divorce Dialogues, and a radio show of the same name. So Catherine, it's so great to have you here. And I think you're such a perfect person to talk about this with, because you are very focused on mediation and the collaborative process versus going to court and battling it out.
I think that's a better way for people to resolve their divorces if they can, and not everybody can, and it doesn't make somebody a better or worse person. Some people require the discipline of the court and that kind of proceeding, but I think that the courtroom is generally a poor place for families and not designed to help resolve family disputes in the way that is supportive of children and is really sensitive to family issues like that.
So Catherine wrote an article for Divorce Girl Smiling called 4 Things Often Overlooked in Divorce Agreements. We're going to talk about the 4 things, but I also want to give credit. It was based on an interview she did with Nancy Hetrick, who is a certified divorce financial analyst who assists in divorcing clients with crafting creative out-of-court settlement agreements. So this information that you're going to hear is from Nancy and Catherine. And before we get into the 4 things, Catherine, do you agree with me that when people get divorced, they just want it to be over? So they might say, well, I'm not going to worry about that now. Let's worry about that later. College is 15 years down the road. I'm not going to think about that. So do you find in your experience people do that?
Absolutely. And I think, first of all, Jackie, I love the way you bring your own personal experience in and say, you know, in a very open way, when I was getting divorced, I just wanted it to be over. And I think so many people want that. And I also think that so many people think it's going to take less time than it does take, and that the process of getting divorced can be excruciating, and it can be very hijacking and very anxiety provoking. So it's not just the length of time, but it can feel like, you know what, whatever it is, at least I'll know what it is and I could deal with that. But this unknowing is killing me. And so that sense of just to have it be something so I know what it is and I can deal with it and I can plan for the rest of my life can feel like a huge priority in the moment. But I also think that it's not just these 4 things. There are so many things that you really need to think through. How's that going to be? And if it takes a little bit longer, it costs a little bit more, and you have to deal with the anxiety for a little bit longer in order to have those things resolved in the long run, it makes a lot of sense to do it that way. So I completely appreciate the pain that my clients and anyone listening to this podcast could be experiencing and how long it's taking and the anxiety that brings up, and having a really as complete a resolution as possible, having thought through all the things that might come up with someone who can kind of, maybe they don't have a crystal ball, but they do know what kinds of questions you're going to need to answer in the future, like college, you know, maybe like driving, maybe like discipline and how you're going to manage those kinds of things. I mean, there's a lot to think through that if you haven't been through a divorce already, you just aren't going to know about what's coming down the road.
Well, going back to my personal experience, you hit the nail on the head. I had to go back to court two more times after my divorce. One time was 2 years later, one time was 4 years later. And in both situations, could have saved myself so much stress, time, and money had we addressed them in the divorce. And I'm not going to blame my attorney for everything, but he could have been more thorough. But also, maybe I was the one that kept saying, I just want this over. I just want this over. And, you know, maybe I pushed him to just get it through. So I'll never really know. But either way, it was a mistake. And I'm trying to help you people who are listening avoid that mistake. So with that said, here are four things often overlooked in divorce agreements. And what I'm going to do is read them. And then Catherine, you can just expand on them.
Sure.
The first one is tax implications are not considered. What does that mean?
Yeah, so it means that there are different tax implications with different kinds of assets that you need to think about. So a dollar is not necessarily a dollar. And what I think of it is the assets that you're getting on the other side of divorce are like a fruit bowl, right? They're all fruit, but they have different flavors and there are different tax implications. For example, a dollar that's in a retirement account, like a 401k or an IRA, is pre-tax, meaning that when you take the money out of that account, you're going to have to pay taxes on it. That's different than a dollar that's in a checking account or a CD, right? Those dollars are post-tax dollars. And so money in a retirement account is usually, there's some exceptions to this, but usually needs to be taxed, will be taxed when the money is taken out versus money in a different kind of account that will not be taxed. That's one thing. So you think of it as apples and oranges. You know, the oranges are going to need to be peeled before you can eat them.
So what you're saying is if someone's going through a divorce and they're going to get X amount of money in their spouse's retirement plan, they should speak up and say, but this, remember, this money's going to be taxed. So maybe I should get more because I'm going to have to pay taxes on it. So it's not the same as giving me the money out of our savings account.
Exactly. Or so, I mean, sometimes people will have a situation where their two biggest assets are a pension, a pre-tax retirement asset, right? And a house post-tax, although there might be some capital gains taxes, but there might not be. And so, and the pension needs to be valued, and in the valuation, there needs to be a tax implication versus the house, which has probably much fewer tax implications. So thinking through what the tax implications are of everything. And yeah, if you're looking at an investment account and a retirement account and thinking about that they're about the same value, they're not the same value because of the tax implications. That's exactly right.
And I want to bring up another thing about the house people don't think about is they get this value. Okay, what's our house worth? And they call up a real estate agent and say, if you were going to put this on the market, what would it be worth? And they don't take into account that maybe the house needs a new roof and that's going to cost $20,000, or, you know, something else is wrong that's going to need fixed. Or yes, when the person goes to sell the house, they're going to have to pay taxes on the capital gains. So these are all things that when I was going through my divorce, we breezed right by this and did not take anything into consideration. So I'm so glad we're talking about this.
If you're looking at getting a stock portfolio and dividing a stock portfolio, the capital gains implications of the assets in that portfolio are different. And you want to make sure, this is tax implications, but it goes beyond just that limited subject. You want to make sure that you're dividing each of the assets in such a way that the tax burden is equally or as equally as possible divided also. So if there's 100 shares of Apple and 100 shares of Google, right, and they were all bought at the same time, that each person should get 50 shares of Apple and 50 shares of Google, not 100 shares of Apple to one person, 100 shares of Google to the other. This is really an important thing and really understanding what the tax implications are of that too. I'm oversimplifying and want to, if you have a portfolio like that, you should talk to someone who helps you manage that portfolio or someone at the institution so that you can understand what the tax implications are for every asset in the portfolio.
You bring up another good point. What about if you get 50 shares of Google? Let's say you get 100 shares of Google and your ex takes 100 shares of another stock, Apple or whatever. Also, those stocks could perform differently. They could also pay different dividends, right? I mean, so those
Absolutely.
Are other things to think about.
Absolutely. So that, you know, when you look at the bottom line, looking at the bottom line, dividing it in half and going your separate ways is way too simple a way to look at that. You really need to look at the detail and what's in that so that you're getting a fair shake as much as he is.
All right. Now, question, Catherine, who should look at these? Like, what kinds of professionals do you need to help you make these good decisions? I mean, obviously your divorce attorney, but who else? An accountant, a financial planner, real estate agent?
I think it's a very good idea to have a certified divorce financial analyst take a look at it because they understand the issues that are relevant to the divorce situation and know what questions to ask and where to look so that they can at least advise you as to what the different implications are. You might decide, listen, I want all the Google shares and you can have the Apple. That's a fine decision to make, but you should make that decision with knowledge, with education, and understand what you're getting into instead of just falling into the situation saying, oh, well, you know, we have $250,000, so I'll just take $125,000 worth of stock, whatever they are.
100% agree. You're listening to the Divorce Girl Smiling podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, divorce attorney Catherine Miller. We are talking about four things often overlooked in divorce agreements, and we're moving on to number two. One or both of the divorcing spouses hold on to real estate they can't afford.
Yeah. So this is a really tough one. Your home is an asset for sure, but it's also a place that you live and a place that can feel like it provides security, especially when you're going through a really disruptive thing in your life, like, you know, divorce. And so people hold on to their homes thinking, well, this is a safe place for me. But it may not really be safe because it could be financially burdensome to live there. And so the financial burden can come in just supporting the costs, the mortgage and the real estate taxes plus homeowners insurance. But it's not super smart to just think of that as being the cost, right? There's upkeep, there's gardening maybe, snow removal, there's energy bills that can be really quite costly in a home that's large enough to hold the whole family. And thinking about what the budget is it in terms of the cost of the home in a pragmatic way, trying to separate yourself out from the sense of I don't want to have to move and get divorced at the same time, two of the most stressful things that can ever happen. And to have someone look at that with you who's not you, because we as human beings skew the way we view our homes in a way that isn't necessarily beneficial. So think about it in terms of a budget. And again, if you think I'm gonna eat macaroni and cheese five nights a week so that I can stay in my home for my kids, because this is better for my kids, probably isn't better for your kids. And that just getting it over with, dealing with the move and having a parent who isn't ridiculously stressed about paying the mortgage every month is probably better for everybody.
I could not agree more. I have two things to say in response to what you just said. The first one is I cannot count the number of people who I know personally and on Divorce Girl Smiling who were devastated by having to sell their home because they knew it was the best thing to do financially. So then they bought a littler home or they rented and they turned out so happy. And they're like, I have this cute little house and I feel so comfortable and it's warm and it's cozy and we're still a family. And you'll see the change seems really scary, but sometimes you have to put a more objective thought process into play. And I know it's really hard to leave a home, but if that's what your mortgage banker and your real estate agent and your divorce attorney and your financial advisor are telling you, listen to them. And the second point I was going to make is that I have been realizing lately, and this is years after being divorced, if you're wondering if you can keep your home or not, I think personally, the first person you should call is a mortgage banker because they're the ones who are going to say, I don't know if you can afford this, or you could afford a mortgage for $200,000 and you're thinking to yourself, you need a mortgage for $500,000. Then you know right off the bat, it's not going to work. Do you agree, Catherine?
I completely agree with that. And I also want to tell you a personal story about my life. When I got divorced a long time ago, I stayed in the family home, and I knew it was going to be really tough to afford it, and it would be really stressful. And my now ex-husband bought a smaller place, and I remember going there to drop off the kids and looking around his place going, I should have bought this place. You know, it's so manageable. It's so affordable. It's manageable. If I lost my keys, I'd find them in a 10-minute search instead of a 45-minute search. And the whole thing would just be so easy to deal with. And I felt like, oh my God, you know, this was a mistake. I should have let him stay in the big behemoth home.
I'm going to move on to number three of the four things often overlooked in a divorce agreement. And before I do that, I want to mention two Divorce Girl Smiling partners who I think would be really helpful if you're looking. So Catherine and I were just talking about mortgages, and I said, I think one of the first people you should call is a mortgage banker. And if you are looking for one, I have known Jeremy Woods. He's a mortgage banker. I've known him for 5 years. He's been in the business for 20. He's a single dad. He's such a nice guy, very smart. We have a lot of mutual connections. I just think Jeremy's awesome. So you can find him on Divorce Girl Smiling or just Google him. Another person I want to bring up is Stephanie Sexauer, who is a wills and estate planning attorney. And why I think that's important is because when people get divorced, they almost always have to redo their will and trust. And Stephanie just did a good friend of mine's will and trust after divorce, and she did a fantastic job. I've known her for about a year, and I really, really trust her. All right, we are moving on to the third thing that of four that can be often overlooked in divorce agreements, and that is one or both of the divorcing spouses fails to receive an independent valuation of marital assets. I don't even know what that means. Can you please explain that?
Well, I think in the article that's on Divorce Girl Smiling, we talk about this McCourt divorce where Jamie McCourt received this $131 million settlement with her husband, Frank. And, you know, that's a bunch of money, right? Mm-hmm. And then a few weeks later, he happened to be an owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers and sold the team for $2.15 billion. And so, well, hello, she would have, if she'd gotten the Dodgers valued by an independent valuator, would likely, I mean, you know, it's hard to look at what exactly would have happened in hindsight, but likely received a bunch more money than $131 million, because I don't know if you know this, but a billion is 1,000 million. Yeah, two of those. That's 2,000 million. That's a heck of a lot of money. And that she walked away from, and she tried to reopen, and the judge agreed she should have gotten an evaluation. So what it means is don't necessarily believe what it says on paper. Just get someone to take a look at assets that are not that easy to value. And that said, though, Jackie, a lot of people own a house, and these days, post-pandemic, the real estate appraisal situation is really very much in flux. And I had a case last year where within a same several week period, two different appraisers appraised a property that was owned by a client of mine and their spouse at $2 million apart. And this was, you know, one appraiser said the property was worth $1.9 million, and another one said it was worth $5.4 million. Now, listen, that neither appraiser was doing anything wrong or doing anything that was particularly slanted. They just had a very different view of what that property is. So sometimes when you are looking at an asset that one person is going to take and the other and buy their spouse out of, you need to get some different views as to what that's worth and to do some independent research on what that is.
So two questions. What do you do when you get two opinions that are that different? I mean,
yeah. That's a very good question. I mean, one thing you need to do is to sort of understand why they're that far apart, right? What were the criteria that each appraiser used? And then bring in another appraiser just to look at what we did was we brought in another appraiser to look at the two appraisals and say what he thought and explain to all of us what he thought was wrong with each of them. And his idea was somewhere in the middle between these two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people, until you sell a property, you never know. And this was a relatively unique property, but they weren't selling it, they were keeping it. And, you know, understanding that if a court can't decide that, what are they gonna do? They're gonna order the property sold because that's the way to find out exactly what it's worth, you know, what a willing buyer is willing to pay for this property in that time. And if you don't want that to happen, then you need to find a way to work that out.
You're listening to the Divorce Girl Smiling podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, divorce attorney Catherine Miller, founder of Miller Law Group, based in New York and serving New York and Connecticut. Number four, the couple doesn't consider the opportunity for creative solutions. Tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, I think that this idea that divorce is a zero-sum game is if I get $5 less, you get $5 more, is a false paradigm. And this idea that it's right and wrong is also a false paradigm. You know, Stephen Covey wrote a book called The Third Alternative, and I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of that, which is basically says that if you, Jackie, and I come into a negotiation, and divorce is a negotiation, make no mistake, right? You and I come into this negotiation, and I'm willing to tell you what's really important to me and what I'm trying to get out of our negotiation, and you tell me the same, what's really important to you and what you're really trying to get out of it and why, then together, having laid our cards on the table, we can come up with a third alternative that's better for me than what I thought would be best for me coming into the negotiation, and better for you than what you thought would be best for you. And so if people are willing to work together creatively, they can find a resolution that might really work better for them than what they think is in their best interest walking into it. And I know that there's a lot of hurt and a lot of pain and a lot of fear, and that can be really tough in a divorce negotiation to do that. But a win-lose paradigm is really going to be a lose-lose paradigm. And if we think about what's important to each person, we might be able to get more of that than might initially meet the eye. And that's what I mean by that.
You know, it's so interesting because one word came to mind when you were talking about this, and it's open-minded. And if people are willing to go into these negotiations with an open mind, like for people listening, we know you're really pissed right now, whatever happened because you're getting divorced, whether your spouse cheated or he or she treated you horribly for years, or, you know, they have an addiction, whatever the reason you're getting divorced, it's very hard to do. But if you want a good outcome, Catherine, tell me if you agree with me, you have to be open-minded. You have to go into these negotiations saying, what is really important to me? I'm going to pick my battles and I'm going to make sure that everything I do benefits my kids. And I'm going to try not to look at the hate and the resentment and the anger and just the bitterness I'm feeling right now, because I'm trying to do what's best for all of us in the future.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And Sue, you know, and I don't think that people need to set aside their emotions in order to do that. I think they need to look into their emotions and think about, other than the hurt and the pain, what is it? If they were 2 years down the road, 5 years down the road, how would they want to be living their lives, right? And back down to now that way, because in 2 years, it's not going to be as painful. In 5 years, even less so. You're going to have moved on with your life and figured out a way to go forward that makes sense for you and for your kids. You know, there's this expression that living well is the best revenge, and that's really true. So what does that really mean to you? And let's try to get that instead of get even.
And then I'll say one more thing about negotiations, mediation, collaborative process. On a personal note, I can speak for this. You kind of walk out of there not ecstatic and think, oh my gosh, I got the best deal. And you also don't walk out thinking, I think I really got screwed. It's somewhere in the middle. It's like, I can live with what I just signed for. It's not the exact custody agreement I want, but it's close. I wish I would have gotten a little more money for this, but I think it's okay. I mean, don't you think, Catherine? You kind of walk out
I
like,
totally do.
I can live with this. Like, it's like buying a car. You're like, I don't know if I got the best deal, but I love the car. I could see myself happy. I can make the finances work. So it's all good.
And then you forget about it because that's what it is. You drive your car, you live your life, you do whatever it is, and you stop thinking about the negotiation, even though right now it might feel like that's never going to happen.
Absolutely. Catherine, you are a joy. It has been so nice having you on here. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that just these four things that we've talked about today, Jackie, these are a way to look at thinking it through. But there may be different ways of thinking it through that apply to each individual listener. And that if you think about logistically, talk to people who've lived it. Read your column, listen to this podcast, and think about what it's going to be like a year or two or five from now, and then think about the divorce negotiation from that perspective. It'll give you a lot of insight and a lot of questions you might be asking your lawyer and other professionals.
Love it. Catherine, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time.
It's been a pleasure, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
So this is the Divorce Girl Smiling Podcast with Jackie Pilisoff, and today's guest was Catherine Miller. She's a divorce attorney based in New York and Connecticut. If you want to reach Catherine, you can reach her at Catherine@Miller-Law.com, and it's K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E at Miller-Law.com. And you can find her also on DivorceGirlSmiling.com. And Catherine, I'm serious. I would hire you in a minute if I was getting divorced in New York or Connecticut. I really mean it.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And we will talk to you real soon.